because we're only recognizing $803 a month, and it's a static number. It doesn't go up. Your income went up, though, because pensions go up by CPI generally. So we say in our formula, oh, your income went up and your rate stayed the same, so your subsidy goes down. That is what we do. I kid you not. And so that's why you can see, you know, the head scratched on the minister of the day. Why is the average amount of subsidy given under SAFER going down? That seems counterintuitive. Rents are going up. Because, Minister, your rent that you are subsidizing isn't going up, right? And so it is a real issue. Seniors subsidized housing, which is the where you go and live in a building and everybody in the building is supposed to be 55 years of age and, or older, and you pay 30% of your... That is a very, very... It's absolutely cost-effective. It builds good communities of people who can help care for each other. The wait lists are extremely long, 3 years on average. Some, about 20%, are waiting more than 5 years. And we've been noting that the percentage of people in seniors housing that are over the age of 65 has been going down. And why that is because the definition of disabled was changed to include mental health and addictions issues. And so, as we all know, that is a very significantly difficult to house population in significant need of housing. And so some of our seniors' housing units are being used for that. And it's not generally working. The government does offer property tax deferral to homeowners. If any of you are home, it's coming up to tax time. And if any of you own your own home, you should be deferring your property tax. You got to pay your property tax one way or another. You got to take it out of your bank account today, or you take it out of the proceeds of the house when it's sold. You're paying one way or another. The only difference is, if you defer them, you pay an interest charge on the money. But it's simple interest, and it is always 2% less than the prime rate. So in my time, which is going to be 10 years at the end of March, that the interest we've charged on property tax deferral has been as low as 0.5%, half a percent. It's gone up now. It's 3.45, but prime is 6.45. So you can take the money you don't pay in your property tax and go and buy a GIC, and then you'll have the money to do the house repairs you need. So that is a valuable program. The government office offers very few people use it, interestingly enough. So, and we've been trying to work with the province to promote it more. That's been an interesting thing. Home adaptations for independents. That's a grant we give people to do renovations on their home. It's a complicated program, but when it works, it works. And the BC Senior Supplement. So those are the things which is should really be called the BC Low Income Senior Supplement. When I first talked about it, you can understand how people got the phones ran off the hook in our office. I'm a senior. How do I get my supplement? So we'd have to explain. And I have advised the government to change the name, because when you see it, you think, I'm a senior, I get this supplement. No, it's very, very low income seniors. You have to be on the GIS, and you have to be on almost full GIS to get it. And it's $100 a month, basically. So if you get the full amount. So it's valuable for those who get it, but it isn't, it's not given to very many people. But it is available. So I think I've talked to you a little bit about the SAFER program. Just to highlight that there are 150,000 seniors in BC who rent. About 24,000 of them get the shelter aid for elderly renters rent subsidy, as it's better than nothing, right? Even though about 23,000 seniors live in senior subsidized housing. Remember that some of those units are not seniors. That means that 2 out of 3 seniors who rent receive no government subsidy, right? So if you want to, the crude math is there are 150,000 renters, 50,000 get some form of help, 100,000 or two-thirds don't get any help. So, and generally speaking, if you are a renter in British Columbia, you've been a rent, and you're over 65, you've been a renter all your life, and you're probably lower income. When we look at who's getting the Shelter Aid for Elderly Renters program, 95% live alone. And eight out of 10 have incomes less than $25,000 a year. And with, you've heard me talk about senior subsidized housing, nearly a three-year average wait time. Okay, now I want to talk about home support. So, and I am banging on about this a lot because it's becoming clearer and clearer and clearer that this is a big problem and it is resulting in people going into long-term care prematurely. So I assume you all know what home support is. Basically, it is the service the health authority will provide to you when you need some help with your personal care at home. So probably most of you in this room don't need home support. You might need housekeeping help, you might need a little, but you don't, you're not at the point. But as we get older, particularly mid-80s into our 90s, a lot of people are gonna benefit from this, especially if they live alone, okay? So that's what home support is. They'll come in, they can help you bath, they can help you dress, they can do some medications, they can, what we call personal care services, okay? And every province has an equivalent program. So, in British Columbia, unlike most other provinces, we charge people for this unless they receive the guaranteed income supplement. So the 30% of seniors, our lowest income seniors, do not pay. But the cutoff for the GIS is about $25,000 a year. So if you're making $28,000 a year, you're paying for your home support because you're not getting the GIS. How much you pay depends on your income, right? So the more you earn, the more you pay, we charge it as a daily rate. So I've used as an example here, a woman, well, it could be a man, but for sake of argument, her income is her gross income is $29,000 a year. So this is someone who gets some CPP, some OAS, and probably has some RIF money coming in or some other pension plan. That's the only way you get to $29,000. She pays a little bit of tax on $29,000, about $2,000 a year in income tax. So her net income is about $27,500, I think it is. If this woman needs just 1 hour of home support a day. So think about this. All she needs is someone to come in the morning, make sure she gets up, gets dressed, is set up for the day. That's all this woman needs. She lives alone. She doesn't need to go to long-term care. If that's all she needs, we are going to charge her $9,000 a year on her $29,000 income for her 1 hour daily visit of home support. I think you all see the problem. And some of you, this may be resonating with you in either your experience or the experience of family, friends, or neighbor that you have. They come in, we do the assessment. First thing we've learned to do is the financial assessment, because the minute we tell people what they have to pay, many of them say, I'm not having the service. So this woman is not getting daily home support. She cannot afford it. She might be taking it every third day or fourth day, except she needs it every day. So she falls on the day we're not there, right? Or what is more likely, she's not getting it at all. So what's happening is she muddles along for a while, family pitches in for a while, and then it all goes pear-shaped and she goes to long-term care. Now, if we were the home support, so currently the way it works is giving her an hour a day of home support is $14,000 a year. She's paying $9,000 of that, and we're paying $5,000 of it, okay? Now, if we didn't have this co-payment, we'd give her the hour of home support, it would cost us $14,000 a year. But we don't do that. So she goes to long-term care. It's costing $82,000 a year. She's paying $22,000 of it because we take 80% of her income. But we're left paying $60,000. That is actually how it works in our system. So just to let that sink in for a moment. 1 hour of home support a day would cost us $14,000. So multiply that. If we did 2 hours, it would be $28,000. 38, 40, 42 or 40, whatever, if we did. So we can provide quite a bit because this is what we're going to pay, $60,000 a year for this woman to be in long-term care. She's going to pay 22, but we're going to pay 60, right? If she lived in Alberta, it would be free. If she lived in Ontario, it would be free. And my slide I thought was going to be here is missing. So I'll just, so when we compare British Columbia to Alberta and Ontario, we find, first of all, in BC, 61% of people admitted to long-term care had no home support prior to admission. So something's missing. That number is only 44% in Ontario, and it's only 30-some percent in Alberta. More significantly, when we look at who is admitted to long-term care with what we call low care needs, in other words, they could be cared for in the community with home support or they could be in assisted living, we have twice as many in BC as they do in Alberta and Ontario. What's the difference? Well, you know, the human body ages the same, whether you're in BC, Alberta, or Ontario. It doesn't age differently. I know we like to believe it ages more quickly in Alberta, but that we no evidence of that. But the difference is the home support is free there. The evidence is very clear, right? Every way you look at this, it's circling back. So, you know, we've got, and I do actually on this issue, I think the government is really starting to listen, in part because our wait lists for long-term care have grown astronomically, and it's now costing somewhere between $600,000 to $1 million a unit, or a bed, as they say in long-term care, to build new facilities. So that's got a lot of attention in government. But, you know, as I sum up here for Seniors Week, and I think the overarching message is not all seniors are the same. And I talk about Judy and Lois. So, you know, cast your mind back 60 years ago, and these women were 30 years of age, and you can see that they were very different. Judy was the stay-at-home mom who had dinner on the table every night. And, you know, if we all have, we all know Judy's in our life who went through and everything, they always did it perfectly. And then we have Lois, the hippie chick. We certainly know some Loises. There may be some in the room. The iconoclast and the, you know, following Jack Kerouac. When these two women were 30, we didn't think they were had anything in common because they didn't have anything in common. They didn't read the same books. They didn't want to do the same things. They didn't vote the same way. They had different ideas about what they wanted for themselves and their lives. But fast forward 60 years. And, you know, conservative stay-at-home mom Judy and hippie chick Lois have now simply morphed into two 90-year-old women. And suddenly, we think everything is the same about them. They want the same things. They want to live in the same way. They definitely want to watch the same TV show because every care home I go into, there's a TV screen and there's eight people watching. I can't imagine. They get them to agree on the show, which I find fascinating. The reality is they're still different. We're all different.
Right.
And we don't lose our individuality and our differences in what we want for ourselves as we age. And that's what's important for us to remember about ourselves. And it's important for us to remember about the people in our lives, whether they are our family members or our friends or our neighbors, is that we no more need to conform to the expectations of society for what 90-year-old women should be doing and wanting today than we needed to conform to what society wanted us to do 60 years ago, right? And that's the important, because really, what are the challenges to healthy aging? Differences in what we want, differences in geography. You live here, you live in the north, you've got a lot more ability to get the supports you need nearby here the financial resources. You know, once you're in your arguably 80s, definitely into your 90s, more money doesn't buy you better health. It buys you choices about how to manage the health issues you have. Family and friends, do you have them and where do they live? That makes a big, big, big difference to supporting us as we age. The ability to stay out of a care home has many elements to it, but part of it is, who are the people around me to help me stay? And health status. You know, you can be 85 years old and very healthy and robust and running and jumping, and you can be 55 and have very poor health, and not your health status determines to a large extent some of the challenges you have. And our control over that is limited. There are some things, obviously, we can do, but our control over our health status is probably a little bit more limited than some of us want to recognize. And with that, and I'm looking at the watch, what time is it?
3:20.
Okay, I got time? Questions and answers, so I'm happy to answer any questions people have.
Let's give a round of applause.
We have questions from the audience.
It's really amazing. I've taken copious notes, and you kept an audience, a diverse audience of wonderful seniors wrapped, so that's pretty wonderful. That's pretty great. And what it does to me, it really reminds me of the need for senior centers, you know, and the need for organizations like 411 to continue to continue to advocate and continue to run our information and our So I'm going to ask for questions. I'm asking that they be questions, not so much statements. Anyone?
This Marion Pollock, one of the two directors.
Okay, you. Yep.
Board chair here at the 411 Senior Center.
Good start.
I just recently got the 2022 report that you did delivered to my home, and I read it, which is facts and figures, as is this, and I'm wondering, because I'm like, what happened with that report? Is it like sitting on somebody's desk collecting dust, or did it actually change anything for the seniors? And this again is facts and figures, but I'm more interested in finding out what you're doing to actually change some of these facts and figures into reality for seniors who don't have enough money to live on. I'm unfortunately in the low group.
So you're talking about the 2022 report on aging.
I read it.
So that report, I don't think it's gathering dust. I think it was very sobering for the government to receive it. There is clearly an impression that seniors have more money than they do. So some. That report reflected some earlier work we've been doing. So some of the things that have happened, the senior supplement was doubled. Now, is it adequate as it is? No, but it's twice what it was 4 years ago. That's the government's response, right? That they did do that. On the two. So if you think about from my perspective, the two biggest issues out there are seniors who rent and this charge we have for home support. The doubling of the senior supplement was helpful because it's mostly people who rent that get it, but they've got to fix the SAFER program. They're working on it. So they've consulted with us. We've raised this issue about the inadequacy of it, the fact that they, you know, nobody could figure out till we told them, you know, why is the average amount dropping? Well, because you're reducing it based on income increases. That, I thought we would have heard the results by now. We haven't. I'm continuing. My fear is they'll what I call tinker at the margins. So what will they do? They'll raise the ceiling a bit. They'll raise the income thresholds a bit. It'll be a little bit extra each month. By a little bit, I mean, you know, maybe $20 extra for people. But it's not meaningfully going to move the dial. I am worried about that. Because to really address it is going to cost a lot of money. What they really have to do is say the rent subsidy program was designed to ensure you spend only 30% of your income on rent and get back to that and have a rent ceiling that reflects it and an income ceiling that reflects it. And they're going to have a challenge with that. But they'll do something a little bit better. This issue around charging people for home support, I am extremely optimistic it will happen before I leave. But I've been overly optimistic in the past. You know, I've agreed to allow them some time over the summer to work out the details, but before I turn up the heat again. But those are the two bigger issues. The issues, and then this bigger issue that we've got to wrestle with, which is how do you deal with the low-income person who's living in the $2 million house, right? And because, first of all, not all homeowners are living in $2 million houses. That's the first thing. Some of the housing in other parts of the province is not, and not everybody is mortgage-free, and on and on it goes, right? We've got to come to grips with this issue, because in the absence of doing that, governments are treating everybody like they're living in a $1 million house. That's the problem, right? That if you are one of the 150,000 seniors who rent, and you're one of the 100,000 that get no help with your rent, you've got nothing to fall back on to help fund some of these other expenses. And governments don't, like food, and governments don't, how many homeowners are there in the room? I just want to know how many people I'm going to offend. So generally I would be offending more people with what I'm about to say. But follow this logic for a moment. Seniors can defer their property tax. Why do we allow the homeowner grant? Right? People will say, well, I can't afford my rising taxes if you take away the homeowner grant. Everybody over 55 can afford their property tax because they can defer it until the house is sold. But we don't want to offend anybody. We don't want to. And the consequence of that is that this group of people who really need the help aren't getting as much as they need. Right? That's the difficult.
Sorry,
I gave too long an answer. I'm sorry.
And I would also say, if you want to join, you know, if you want to sort out of action, come and join the 411 Senior Center and our Senior Issues Group. We're constantly advocating for issues. Gentlemen, they're down there.
Thank you. And that was a beautiful presentation. I used to teach research methodology, and that was just A+. I agree, and I think most would agree, that the two higher priorities you're setting, for housing and home care are the forms of support that will give more immediate relief to people, especially most in need. But I'm curious, with respect to where we are today, about if you could kind of give us a perspective on what is the status of senior centers? What are they understood to be? I'm new to it. I've only been coming for activities here and over at South Granville Senior Center for the past year, and I'm almost blown away by the depth and breadth of support that comes out of it. But I've never seen it articulated well, and if I've never seen it, I'm pretty sure it doesn't have much profile in government. So what is the status of senior centers in government?
You're correct, because I can't answer your question, and that's a problem, right? So we can talk a lot about the things, the services that we take into people's homes, because we thought that's what it was all about. What has now been realized is we have to get people out of their homes as well. And that, I think many knew that before, but COVID certainly, you know, taught, you know, on the one hand, isolation and loneliness, but every program we have is about keeping you in your home, and we need to help you also get out of your home. There is currently no government program where you can see a map on the wall of all the senior centers in BC, each receiving what you should be able to is have this map, and you, however many, let's say you have 134 senior centers in BC, and the government funds each one of those centers for a certain amount, and each center offers a certain core service. Now, some will argue, well, that's better at home, but it's not. The better at home is about programs, not funding a physical center. Seniors need to be able to come into some place where they can get a cup of soup at least once a week, maybe every day. I mean, it'll vary a bit by community, by size, right? But that's what we should have, and we don't. And the reason we don't, there's a couple of reasons. Government has sort of, it's all fragmented with people get a gaming grant over here and a this over there and a that. And then the other problem is within community, so now I'm going to offend people again. Within, there are also, in some communities, it's too fragmented. There's too many little, you know, there's this little program over here and this little program over here, and it should all come together. If you really want to focus on what the senior wants, the senior doesn't care. When you move into a community, you don't care. Like, and I've been on a board of directors and I reported, nobody cares who the board of directors is. You want to know, you want to be able to phone 211 and say, I've moved into Fraser and 21st, I think, where's my nearest senior center? And they'll tell you. Now, they, if you made this call, they would tell you to come here. And you come to your senior center, and you know that, you know, here's somebody to help me with my income tax, and if I make too much money, they'll tell me how. That's what we need. And we need, and so, and we need common nomenclature, right? Senior centers really should be senior centers, period, right? And behind the scenes, they can have, you know, the local commute, the flavor, and the, but, you know, it's this, you walk through one door, and the door looks the same, and behind the door is, there's one, there's a core set of services, and then depending on the communities, there'll be additional services, right? Because of the, some communities will have a lot of things related to multicultural, some communities will have things related to the distances, to it will vary, but there's a core. So you're right, it isn't there. It is, in my final year, that is one of the projects we're working on, is to bring this to the attention of government and get them to shift their better at home funding a little bit better to align with that. But
this is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C. Thank you for spending time with me and the Salua Show this morning. Next week, join me again at 10, and you'll hear something that will motivate you to go out and make the world a more engaging, beneficial place for all. And, but remember, when people ask me what time it is, I say it's always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, time for poems, poets and singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time, time.
listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.